Hello, welcome back to Dr. Ray Talks It Over, the program designed for parents and families, where the aim is to help you stand strong as a parent for the sake of your kids. I'm Jerry Usher, along with Dr. Ray Guarendi, father of 10 children, psychologist, and author. Dr. Ray, good to be with you again.
Hi, Jerry. Appreciating more and more the soundproof booth.
Yeah.
I told the children I got to get one of these for me, for my time out at home. When I'm bad, I'm just going to go in my soundproof booth and don't bother me.
Or when they're bad, maybe they can spend some time there.
Well, if they're quiet, okay.
We've been talking the last two programs about making discipline work. We still have some ground to cover in this particular area. So
we didn't make it work the first two times?
Well, we came close.
See, that's just like discipline is. You got to keep repeating it.
Consistency
and, right.
perseverance. Dr. Ray, one thing I'd like to start with. Your books mention what's called the illusion of discipline. What is that?
Simply stated, the illusion of discipline is words. Words in whatever form, however many, however loud, however prolonged, however agitated, however frustrated, words are not discipline. They are words. My mother's discipline philosophy was, you never say in seven words what you can say in 67,000. I would be in the backyard oblivious to my mother trying to get me in the house for supper when the torrent of words would begin. Now, Jerry, here is a cardinal, a core, an axiomatic law of discipline. The mouth is not the organ of discipline. If you are not prepared to back this mouth up with some kind of action or consequences, do not open it. Children are too smart for that. They know there's nothing backing up our words. My mother would start. Raymond Nicholas Guarendi, how many times are you going to make me call you Buster? You know, buddy boy, you seem to think I talk just to hear myself talk.
We've all heard
you
that.
You seem to think I like the sound of my own voice. Well, I'm going to tell you something, buddy. You better listen, and you better listen good. I was not put on this earth to serve you. There are five other people in this house. You think we're going to evolve our schedule around yours to come waltz here, pluck your bucket down, and I just stood there, Jerry. Because my attitude was, she's not mad enough yet. Many parents are convinced that, in fact, we discipline when what we are doing is the masquerade of discipline. We are nagging. Butkus, don't make me tell you again. Do you want me to do something about it? This is the last nine times I'm going to say this. We remind. We cajole. Would you please leave her alone? Now, I've told you before, just please leave her alone. We overreason. How would you like it if somebody treated you that way? Would you like it if somebody treated you that way? You're treating her the exact same way you don't want to be treated. Now, do you think that's a good way to treat somebody? Because I'm going to tell you something. What if I treated you that way? Would you like it if... We reason as if the child's going to go, oh, mother, thank you. Thank you for explaining it to me the last 72 minutes. You know, had you stopped at 43 minutes, I don't think I would have understood it. But since you went on for an hour and a half, it's all very clear to me. All words can work, sorta. And if they're going to work, they work early. You get past 10, 15, 20, 25 words, you're now getting into no person's land where quickly they could become ineffective. The other problem is this, Jerry. Words will work if in the past they have been backed up. That's why many parents will say, you know, all my father had to do was give me a look. My mother just had to clear her throat. Well, yes, that's because we learned that that look meant something. And if we ignored that look, they were prepared to act. And so they didn't even use words. The masquerade, the illusion of discipline, is substituting mouth where action should be.
You know, it brings to mind another question that I would have, and that is parents who maybe ask their kids if they can discipline them.
Oh, you're talking of addenda. It's the old, you see this when my kids were in preschool. I used to pick them up, and I'd wait in the hallway, and you watched it. Come on, Joshua. Come on, honey. We're going to go, okay? Come on. Get your coat on. You want to get your coat on? Would you get your coat on, please? Okay. All right. Get your coat on. So much of what parents said was a tack on asking, as if to say this is up for negotiation. Now, there's nothing wrong with asking a child to do something, Jerry, and anybody who's been listening to this series knows that when I talk about discipline, I usually put it in the form of a request. Would you please go to your room? would you please stand in the corner? But it's not really a request. It is more or less, I'm asking you very nice, and I'm prepared to follow through. The kind of discipline you're talking about is an attempt to let's just all get along. Can't you just go along with me? Can't we just kind of agree? Now, here's the problem. Kids don't want to agree. I don't want to leave. I don't want to stop jumping off the couch. I don't want to bring the car back by 11 o'clock. Now, I need you to have the car back by 11 o'clock, okay? As if the child's going to go, oh, okay. Had you not asked me, I wouldn't have, but since you said okay, I'll be agreeable. It makes us feel better when we do that. There's something within us that still resists putting down a firm line. And therefore, when we go, what, would that be all right? In so many words, we're asking the child, let's all just get along. You see it my way, and we'll be happy. But the reality is, children don't cooperate. I don't want to put my bike away, okay? I don't want to come in now, all right? And that's really not what we're saying. Is it a problem? No, if the child cooperates. Unfortunately, over time, they tend to realize, you know, you don't mean much of what you say. You're negotiating here, and as I get older and a little more stronger-willed, I'm going to ignore your okay. So putting discipline in question is generally not a good way to do it. You know what's related? Giving choices. Parents will say, I like to give my children choices. Do you want to wear the blue outfit or the red outfit? Do you want to come home at 10 o'clock, or do you want to call me before you come home? That's not a problem as long as it's understood that these are the options I'm giving you and there aren't any other options, so we don't negotiate for the next hour. Unfortunately, sometimes we give choices when we shouldn't give choices, when we should simply say, you know, the car needs to be home by 11 o'clock or you won't get it for the next week. Now, there's a choice. Please bring the car home or you don't go out.
You mentioned a lot of different things, from standing in the corner to bringing the car home at a certain time. Obviously, here you're getting into different age.
You don't want to put the car in the corner.
No, you don't want to put the car, and you don't want to send the 4-year-old out and tell him to bring the car home.
Bring the car back. That's right.
It brings up the question, though, about age-specific consequences for things. Are there different things you would do for different age groups?
Yeah, and I think, as I alluded to on an earlier show, do something that is very easy for you to enforce. The little kids. A lot of times people make fun of timeout. I don't have any problems with timeout. Where I have problems with it is that generally it's too easy the way most people do it. If a little 3-year-old throws a fit, they put him in the corner for 2 or 3 minutes. That's really not enough to deter much future fitting. That's too short. Okay, even though the child development people would say 1 minute per year of age in timeout. I always laugh at that. Because if you put a little 3-year-old in timeout for 3 minutes, they usually haven't quit screaming in 3 minutes, you know? And look what it conveys. He punches his sister in the head, and you put him in timeout for 3 minutes. You're basically saying, oh, your sister's head is worth 3 minutes. Come on. Penalty, high sticking in the face, 3 minutes. I like timeouts, though, because they're good for the parent. They get the kid out of your face. They separate the two of you. They can be enforced anywhere, any place, anytime. Every place has corners. Every place has chairs. Every place has places where they can go sit and put their head down. In our home, for example, we have 4 corners in the kitchen, which is a problem because with 10 children, the corners get backlogged. And I do what they do in the prison systems, you know. I'll give the kid a sheet of paper and I'll say, here, guys, you show up next Wednesday at 2 a.m. You got corner time. Now, the courts got on us. They were saying that our corners were overcrowded, so we now have a halfway couch program. And so with little kids, I like timeout. And we're going to talk about spanking on future shows because I know people are thinking, you know, Ray, you're not talking about spanking. Don't worry, we're going to get to that. That's why you have to stick around. Older kids, I love some forms of writing. Let me preface this by saying, Jerry, that many people will go, wait a minute. Don't teach him to write. That is punishment. You use writing for punishment, and you're going to turn them off towards the English language. We want children to love writing. In response to that, there's no research anywhere that says making children write an essay turns them off towards writing, none whatsoever. Secondly, if you take 100 writers and you ask them, what is the one thing you need to do to be a better writer, what will they tell you, Jerry?
Write more.
Write more. You got to write. That's right. It's a discipline. It's a skill. Thirdly, the benefits far outweigh any potential problems down the road. There are so many benefits to writing. It's easy to do. It's quantifiable. Talk about making the punishment fit the crime. When people say, make the punishment fit the crime, how do you discipline a child who is disrespectful and make the punishment fit the crime?
Teach them respect.
Yeah. But if you send them to their room, how is that fitting the crime? If you fine them a dollar, I mean, I would do those things, but it isn't fitting the crime. An essay fits the crime. You got to write a 400-word essay on respect and why you don't treat people that way. I like dictionary words. Can use dictionary words. For example, you know, if you're going to have to use that kind of language, I assume you need a bigger vocabulary. So what I want you to do is go to the dictionary, please, and write 10 words, 10 letters or more, define them, use them in a sentence. If you're going to talk that way, we're going to expand your vocabulary. Now, my dad used to be pretty tough. He'd say things like, I need two words beginning with QZ. Hey, Dad, there's no words beginning with QZ. Well, you're going to have to get a big dictionary then. But, Dad, you know, so you can do that. I like writing. We use it a lot. I'll tell you something else we've started to use with our older children. Labor. You've got yourself an hour's worth of help. You're going to have, if you've got enough energy to cause that kind of trouble, you've got an hour's worth of work coming. And their mom will simply give them chores and work for 1 hour. One mother told me she gave a job jar. Job jar is a jar filled with written chores. Vacuum the family room. Dust all furniture. Sweep out the garage. Load the dishes. All in the job jar. Reach in, pull one out. Mm. Whatever you pull out, that's what you do because that's your consequence for doing what you did. You know, a parent comes home and says, you know, I asked you to clean up that whole room while I was gone. You didn't do it. Oh, yeah, I forgot. That's the great line, I forgot. I didn't hear you. Please go to the job jar. You got the room and whatever you pull out of the job jar. Sure. So I like those kinds of consequences. Simple, straightforward, and you can use them multiple times. We have the cleanest house in the whole neighborhood.
There's no surprise goodies in there, like fix yourself an ice cream sundae.
They just try to put those
just
in.
Just jobs.
I recognize their handwriting, though. You know, I said, who put this in here, buy yourself a red Corvette? Who wrote that?
You know, it reminds me, one time I shared a bedroom with one of my brothers, and we had trouble quieting down at night. It got to be 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and we still hadn't obeyed and shut up, gone to sleep. We found ourselves out shoveling dirt.
Oh! I hope it was dirt outside and not in your
outside.
Room.
Oh, yeah, it was outside.
I've seen boys' rooms.
It was
one of those, in your room.
What you're saying, though, it's like, you got energy? Good, let's go.
Ooh, that's
get some of these chores
dirt.
Done. Yeah, I don't want to give anybody, well, obviously.
That's a good one. I mean, you can be particularly brutal to live on a farm, you shovel manure or something, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. I got to remember that. Excuse me, I had to write that down.
Well, regarding age and discipline, at what age should a parent begin to discipline?
It depends how you define discipline. If you define discipline as teaching, that begins very early, 10, 11, 12 months. You know, a child's throwing food off of a high chair. You say, no throwing food, and you put their hand up on the high chair, and you kind of to hold it there. But if you define discipline as putting a consequence on conduct, for most people that starts around anywhere between 15 and 20 months of age. Is the child's first visit to the steps or the first swat on the bottom or the first being put in their crib or the first being held down with their hands at their side because they're throwing something or hitting somebody. That's generally when it starts. And the first bunch of times you do it, Jerry, the kid looks at you like, what in heaven's name are you doing? How does this have anything to do with the fact that I just spit? They don't make the link. But that's okay. What you're doing is you're establishing the link. It is starting. You're teaching the child, if you do A, mommy does B. And that's all they understand.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, they won't do A because they don't want B. But over the years, then they start to understand, oh, you don't hit people because that's not nice. You don't hit people. That's not nice, huh, mom? So I say 15 to 20 months is where most people begin.
What if a child's too young to know better or to control him or herself?
Ooh. Well, there's legitimacy to that when you look back and say a 12, 13, 14-month-old is acting up in church, for example. They really don't know better, and to try to discipline them for that is just wasting your time and frustrating them. You got to just get out of there for a moment. Unfortunately, what is happening is many parents are prolonging this up to age 2.5 and 3 and 3.5, going, what if he doesn't know better? What if he can't control himself? When you get much past 2 years of age, virtually all children, unless there are significant intellectual developmental delays, are capable of being taught and learning. I use this analogy. Jerry, have you ever had a dog?
Oh, yeah.
When you toilet trained that dog not to go to the bathroom on your carpet, did you wait until the dog could understand why he shouldn't go to the bathroom on your carpet?
No.
No, that day would never come, correct?
Right.
You taught him you don't go to the bathroom on the carpet. It's kind of the same thing with a child. Much of what you do at the front end of socialization is teaching them. You don't do this because this is what will happen and this is what I'll do. And you start to teach. And initially, they don't understand it. Or initially, it's ever so flimsy, their level of understanding. But if you wait, you allow bad habits to form. I've heard this advice. Don't make children say thank you. Don't make children say I'm sorry. Because the average 4- and 5-year-old do not understand gratitude, and they do not understand remorse. So therefore, for you to tell them to say I'm sorry is simply going through a rote behavior that you're wasting your time on. Now that is, by the way, not the idea of some fringe flaky notion. That's the idea of much dominant child development theory. The problem with that, of course, is if you don't teach the children the habit, it takes a lot longer to form the virtue. And therefore, if I'm 5 years old and have never learned to say thank you to anybody, when am I going to start? At age 6, am I going to go, Mother, you know, I think I'm capable of expressing gratitude now, and I'm ready to begin the appropriate behavioral process of expressing my gratitude, however perfunctorily, through a few common words used in the polite English language. That's not going to happen.
So thanks.
Yeah, yeah. And so therefore, we as parents begin to teach way before there's full comprehension. Why tell a child about the Holy Trinity? Why tell a child about Jesus Christ? He doesn't know. He doesn't understand. He simply knows whatever you can give him at his level. Are you not going to tell him about Jesus Christ? Are you going to wait till he's 22 and go, you know, son, now I think you're old enough to really begin to debate and intellectualize the difficulties with comprehending the Trinity. So let's begin. No, we start all of this stuff way before. And our Heavenly Father does something interesting. He reveals himself to us in ways that we don't comprehend. And we don't understand the Trinity, and we don't understand deeply the Incarnation. But we accept it, knowing that his instruction is way above us, but we trust him. Same thing with a parent when you're teaching a child. We're instructing them in things that they can't grasp why they do or don't do this. But that's okay. Someday they'll be better at it, and we will have already laid the foundation in place.
You know, one of the crazy things I heard growing up, and I don't know if it's true or not, I'd like to ask you about this, the birth order effect. A lot of people will say that, you know, the middle child
middle
has
child
these
syndrome.
Problems, or the oldest boy, or the youngest girl, or...
I tell parents, if you're that afraid of middle child syndrome, don't have an odd number of kids. That's exactly right. You got an odd number, have another one, give one away, wipe out that middle spot. The only place that the research seems to indicate a birth order effect in that children are different, they have different characteristics on the basis of where they are in the family, is the oldest child and the only child. As a group, they may be, and this is just a little bit, a little more independent, a little more achieving. Maybe they develop a little quicker. And, Jerry, I'm convinced that's not because of their position. We parents change our styles. The first kid, you boil everything she comes within 50 feet of. The last kid, you throw them this big dirt ball and say, here, chew on that. Wipe your mouth off in the gas can before you come in the house.
Yeah, right.
You know, the first kid, dual videotape of every burp and bowel movement he ever had. The last kid, one snapshot at the birth, one at the wedding rehearsal dinner, you know? Somebody asked my wife when our 9th one, Peter, was about 2-3 months old, is Petey sleeping through the night yet? And my wife said, I don't know if he is. We are. You just get to that point. There is a certain amount of parental relaxation that takes place.
Yeah.
Our first child, Andrew. Oh, I wrote down on his little calendar when he learned each letter and what time of day it was and what time of day it was in Indonesia and what second it was. And I had videotapes of it. And we made all the relatives watch the videotapes when he first learned bye-bye. My last kid, I'm going, now what grade are you in? Fifth. How long you been in fifth? Where? What's your name? It just sort of happens, you know. And I think it's a good thing. There's a certain relaxation that takes place. You've been through this before. You know that some of this will pass. You know that some of the irritations that seem such a crisis when you were on your first child and he couldn't tie his shoes when he was 5 years old, and you're thinking, but he's gone into kindergarten, he can't tie his shoes yet, and I can't just keep buying those buckle ones. You realize that by the time you get the third, fourth, fifth, eighth kid, by the time he's dating, he'll be able to tie his shoes. You know, he'll get the shoes tied eventually. And so those kinds of things just sort of maybe slip. The other day, my son Peter's 3 and a half, and a while back I said to my wife, can Petey count? And she goes, I don't know. Petey, come here. Count for Daddy. And he stumbled his way up through 18 or 19, something like that. And I turned to one of the older kids and I said, did you teach him that? The first kids, they all knew how to count by the time they were 3, you know. They knew what they were doing. I didn't even know. But it ultimately happens. And those are the kinds of things I think you relax on with more children.
You know, we're, again, running out of time. The time passes so quickly. 3 or 4 minutes left and probably 4 or 5 points I'd still like to ask you about. We'll see if we can get to a few of these. What about the issue of temperament? How powerful is temperament in a child?
That's 10 shows right there. Next to a parent's influence, temperament is the single biggest determinant of who a child is or what she becomes. Some kids are wired from birth like Chastity's. They come into the world, oh, hello, mother. Did you want me to sleep through the night on the first night home from the hospital or the second? Spike comes into the world kind of like, Damien! It's the way they're wired. And part of the problem, we were talking with Tom Price, our engineer on the other side of the glass there, and Tom has a very sweet little boy named Spencer. Spencer's 9 years old. And Spencer seems to be the male counterpart of a Chastity. He seems to be an Oxford. Mm-hmm. And now, if and when Tom has a second child, if he doesn't get a little Oxford, he's going to be messed up. If he gets a normal kid, he's going to think he's got Damien because it's the shell shock second child syndrome. Routinely, children come to parents with different characteristics, different personalities, different relentlessness, different activity levels, different maturity levels, different social judgment levels, and the parent is responsible for placing a moral system over top of that. Some kids, you can look at them crossways, they will crumble up in a corner, cry themselves to sleep, not misbehave for the next 4 weeks, and leave little love notes with hearts all around your pillow. Other kids, to get them to sit in a chair, you got to glue their hands to the floor, they chew them off at the wrist to get out. I mean, this is the way they're wired. So they will make you be a stronger parent. We don't have time, I see the clock there, we don't have time to talk about such things as strong-willed, difficult child, oppositional child. If we get a chance in future shows, I would like to talk about that because I think that's such a common misunderstanding. Suffice it to say here, I believe that strong-willed is one of the most overused descriptors of children because most children are strong-willed. What else would you expect from somebody at birth with a sin nature?
In our last couple of minutes, a couple other things I'd like to have you touch upon. First of all, kids that pit mom against dad. And secondly, who should discipline in the family? A lot of people would say it should be dad. In some situations, dad's not around, single parents, so forth like that. So first of all, the question of when kids pit mom against dad.
Appealing the decision. Dad, mom told me to ask you if I could go over to Wendell's house because she said it was okay with her if it was okay with you. And dad finds out 8 minutes later after the kid's gone that indeed mom didn't say that. In our house, appealing the decision is a punishable offense. If you get an answer from one parent and you go to another parent, we view that as deceptive and lying and weaseling, and you're not going to be a politician on us. In fact, that's a punishable offense.
And parents need to be united on that.
Yes, we need to check. Mm-hmm. Because you always find it out. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, if they left or if they do something, the other parent says, hey, I didn't give him permission to do that. Well, he came to me and said you did. Well, I didn't. So the kids are going to get caught virtually every time. Punishable offense, appealing the decision is wrong. Flat out. Second question.
Who should discipline in the family?
Simple rule, the person who sees the behavior should discipline. However, wherever possible, mom and dad should consult each other, I think, on the big stuff. And I'm hearing more and more wives say that their husbands are not backing them up. The moms have the instincts, and maybe their style is a little wordy, but dads are kind of tolerate, oblivious, oblivious, ignore, kill. So at that point, I always tell the husbands, if you see a problem and you see your wife caught up in a trap, and vice versa, wife sees her husband caught up in a trap, step in, pull the plug, discipline there, and then talk about it later. Back each other up. If I find out that my kids gave their mother grief when I get home, and she dealt with them, depending upon what they did, they may also have to deal with me, because that isn't just their mom they're giving grief to, that's my wife.
Well, this is good stuff, and we're going to continue a little bit along the same vein, but we're going to switch gears a little bit next time and talk about discipline problems when we continue with Dr. Ray on Dr. Ray Talks It Over. How can people get in touch with you, get a hold of your materials, maybe schedule you to come and speak?
Easiest way, website, www.kidbrat.com, one word. Sweetest way, a letter. Dear Ray, I miss you so much. Thanks for being on the show with Jerry.
Very good. So when we continue next time, real answers to real discipline problems as Dr. Ray talks it over. God bless.